Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Look who just stepped in the studio. None other than Neil Steinberg. To my eye, to my reading eyes and lying eyes, I think he is the finest wordsmith that this newspaper community in Chicago, and a great one it has
Absolutely
been, has ever
one.
Seen. Mm-hmm. I enjoy just the wordsmithery of what happens. I don't even think that's a word. Isn't that ironic that I used a bad word?
Yeah,
for
I
you?
Think it is a word. It's a word now, Ro. It's a living language that you can.
It is a living language. Thank you. That is so true.
Good to see you, Neil.
Good to see you.
Thank you for stopping by to talk about the book and everything else going on. I know you have a theory about how you think Trump is going to win too, because I saw your column on that. So we've got to get to that at some point. Because Ro, you have the same theory that it's very possible at this point than a lot of people thought a month ago or so. Wouldn't it be possible?
Yes, I think that is. I think I do agree with Mark McKinnon. We just had him on. The former Bush advisor, now one of the co-hosts of The Circus on Showtime, he thinks that the momentum may have slowed down. But we'll get to that in a minute. I want to get to the book first, because there's a number of things in this. 2 years ago, Mr. Steinberg and I were having lunch at a fine downtown restaurant, which shall remain nameless, Harry Carey's. And we were, and Neil was basically pitching me the book. Mm-hmm. He was saying, here's what I'm working on. And you've written down so many, the history of failures and all this other stuff that you've done. Right. Hats. Right. You've chosen some pretty quirky material. But you had a smash hit with your book Drunkard, which was a very, very personal tome about your own experience with alcohol.
Right. I'm a Dante fan, and Dante teaches you if you go to hell, you take notes. So I didn't even read recovery memoirs. It was a genre like romance novels. But there I was. So I thought I would use the experience.
Yeah. And so Neil, as it was explained to me, says, and he's got this fascination, obviously, with literature of all forms. And there is, and he goes, and you found all these references to alcoholism and recovery and AA.
This book was an accident. It was like a car wreck, Ro. I found these quotes that were useful to me. Okay, when you're feeling tempted, there's Virgil, yield not to evil, tuna sidi malis, okay? And that's a plan, that's a strategy. And I would sort of collect them, and I read very widely. And I was talking to a woman named Sarah Bader, who is a quote researcher in New York City. And I said, I always thought this could be a book, because people don't get addiction. They think it's just some stupid choice that stupid people make because they're stupid. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand the mental illness obsessive quality to it, as writers throughout history understood who've gone through it. And so I said, I thought I could put this together to explain, especially to family members, because when you're going through recovery, you don't necessarily know what's happening. And I wanted something to explain. That's why it's called a companion. I wanted to explain to people what's going on, and also to inspire them, because it's really hard to go through rehab. It's really hard because there's this thing you love, whether it's alcohol or drugs or anything other addiction, and you're giving up the most important thing in the world. And unless you find something to replace it, you're going to go back. There's a relapse chapter in the book explaining how to prevent that. And so I use literature as one of the things that helped me stay on the path. And I thought maybe it could help other people. And that's why Sarah and I wrote Out of the Wreck I Rise.
So do you recommend it for people who are taking the steps to sobriety? Or is it helpful to their family members and the people around them as well?
I think both. I mean, there's a family chapter. It's called Shakespeare's Child. Each chapter starts with a quote. This is a quote from William Faulkner's daughter, where she goes to him and says, "Dad, don't drink." And he looks at her and says, "Nobody remembers who Shakespeare's child was." It's a very cold quote. And then, so to me, I mean, families in an even worse situation sometimes, because they don't have, they can't get drunk and high to sort of assuage all this. So they have to take this straight. So I think it's very important for family members to know what's happening. And to create sympathy for the addict. I mean, there's a quote from Russell Brand, the comedian, where he says, "Is there any other affliction that makes the victim so unpleasant?" And he talks about how they'll lie to you and cheat to you and steal you. Because, we have this old Puritan sort of view of addiction, that it's just this moral failing, that you're a bad person, blah, blah, blah. And they don't get the disease quality of it.
Now, there are some things in here we could just go through. I could read the book to you right now.
Please.
Do we have enough time for
I don't think we do.
No.
But there are such inspirational things, for people who have, I think even beyond alcohol, People have struggled with all forms, whether it's depression. Well,
there's a chapter on time. I mean, anyone who has to get over something, because, you know, when you give up your substance, you have to get over this loss. It's an enormous loss. You're like, well, just drink less and you'll be fine. And it doesn't work like that. That's what the alcoholic aspect of it is. And so, you know, this is hopefully for anyone. And there's just a lot of beautiful poetry, a lot of very helpful thoughts in it that someone who's going through a tough time can use. I hope.
You said that AA was not for you, and the elements of it that weren't particularly helpful or that really got you through it, you needed something else.
Well, I make a great point of not putting AA down. It's helpful to millions of people, but the two things it really offers, God and the fellowship of other people, those are the two things I'm most armored against.
I've known him for 3 decades, and basically... Yeah, that's the 1-2 punch right there for Neil Steinberg.
Yeah, other people creep me out.
He doesn't want to be touched.
I know parts. Someone else like that, right?
Yeah. We have a little essay from Simon Rich in the book. I mean, we have Homer Simpson's in the book, Marge Simpson's in the book. I don't want people to think this is all Dante and highbrowed stuff, although there's Spider-Man 2 in it. I mean, one aspect of the book I'm very proud of is I argue that recovery is heroic. It's an adventure that you go on. You know, if climbing Mount Everest can be an adventure, why not give up this tremendously appealing yet destructive substance for the sake of yourself, for the sake of your family? So, you know, I make that argument and I marshal these quotes, hopefully, to prove my case.
It was particularly challenging for you, I think. And I would, you know, I've had other friends in the business, journalists, broadcasters who have gone through becoming sober and dealing with addiction, but yours became so public because of the incident with your wife, and that made the papers, and suddenly I saw an interview with you in Chicago Magazine where you said, the whole world, I'm like the most hated drunk in Chicago right now, or whatever.
Well known, probably hated too.
You know, but whatever, you felt that pressure, and was that sort of what drove it? I mean,
I couldn't hide it. You know, people were like, "Oh, it's courageous of you to be public." I'm like, "Well, you know, I couldn't." When I was checking into Highland Park Hospital, the nurse says, "Of course, your being here is completely confidential." And I said, "You know, my being here is in the New York Post this morning, so the confidentiality is just not." So I mean, in a sense, it forced my hand. Okay, and I couldn't deny it. And although, I mean, the lingering part is you write about Trump and you get a lot of people writing in saying, hey, you're an alcoholic, your wife, you know, they have this club and they're Trump supporters, so they're bullies already. And they don't realize that the alcoholic thing is like the best thing you've ever done. Not that I'm glad I became an alcoholic, but to get away from that, so many people are done in by it. And I, you know, I might be done in by it someday too. You know, the one day at a time thing is really true, but it's been 10 years on. I haven't been done in by it yet. Mm-hmm. Like there's a quote here from Lucille Clifton, a beautiful poem where she says, it's called Come Celebrate With Me. And she's saying, and one of the lines is, come celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed. And that's really what it is. When you're an addict, every day this thing is there and it's like this beast in the basement and you can hear it. Some days it's completely silent. And some days you hear like the door creaking as it throws its weight against it. And you have to have a strategy, you know, to keep it down there. At least that's how I view it.
Yeah.
And that's why I wrote Out of the Wreck I Rise.
So let's talk about, by the way, speaking of that, let me get this in too. You have an event coming up here.
Tomorrow from 12 to 2. I'm very excited. This is at Atlas Stationers on 227 West Lake. There are no proper bookstores in the Loop. And so when my Chicago book came out 4 years ago, this is a 75-year-old family-owned office supply store. Teresa and Don Schmidt, lovely people, and they held a book signing for me 4 years ago. And so they're holding a book signing tomorrow, and they're charging a penny less than Amazon. I said, you know, you can charge full price. People who come to these book signings, they're ready to pay. But Don wanted to show that he can beat Amazon at their game. So if you have 100 books festooning their store, so I'm sort of terrified they're going to be stuck. So I'm going to be there 12 to 2 tomorrow, Thursday at 227 West Lake in the shadow of the L. And it's benefiting Atlas Stationers, so I hope people show up for it.
Okay, 227 West Lake. That's Lake and Wells.
Orleans. Right? Lake Orleans.
And Orleans,
yes.
Okay.
Just south of the Loop, just south of the L.
Yep. All right. Now, you're welcome. I want to talk to you about your column today,
okay?
Because let's talk about that. And I do, and I suggest that people, when I suppose that I've known Neil and trusted in his art for so long that when he was pitching this to me over a Italian salad with chicken on top of it, I when I was thinking to myself, my mind was reeling, and I thought, I know he's got a plan here, and I know that this is probably going to be great. I just couldn't see it. And then I saw it on in between the covers.
This is the book, not the column.
This is the book. No, this is the book.
There's never been, I mean, the New York Times, God bless them, called this a different sort of book. And I don't think this kind of book has ever been done because it's not an anthology. These quotes aren't just collected by theme. They're mortised together to tell a story or one kind of leads to the next.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's
it's
ever
great.
Been done. Thank you.
It's great. It's beyond great. It is. It's inspirational. It's a fun read. It's for anybody who's ever, you know, dealt with alcoholism in their family or themselves or depression or loss. I think loss is the biggest piece here, too.
I mean, part of having successful sobriety is you need to help other people. And so I'm not a sponsor. I don't help people that way. It's not preaching, but I see this as someone, you know, you have to be willing to do it. You can't just throw this in the rubber room with someone who doesn't want to get better. But if you want to shed your addictions and build another life, I like to think this is like bricks and mortar. You can take these thoughts, and I've read this book 100 times, and I wrote it, and I still enjoy with Sarah Bader. It was wonderful to have a co-author. I can't praise her enough. You know, we never met. 4.5 years, we wrote it over the phone in Google Doc.
How about that?
It was so great having another person because, you know, she sort of cut back my grandiose nature, and she found all these fantastic
quotes. Finally, we found someone who did
that's right. At one point, I told her, you know, I said, Sarah, except for the fact that I'm married and we've never met, this is almost like a romance. So it really was a wonderful relationship we had writing this
book. That is great. All right. Now, by the way, speaking of the Sun-Times, where Neil writes his column, we have tickets to the Sun-Times playoff party happening next Tuesday, also at Harry Carey's. My God, when will these people get out of our lives?
Seriously.
October 4th, featuring me and Carrie Wood, brought to you by IDOT. So I've got those coming up at 4:40 today. And after 5:30, I got a pair of tickets to the Green Tie Ball that you and I are hosting
on Saturday night. Big day. Get your tickets to that, too.
All that comes your way. And we'll be right back with Neil Steinberg from the Sun-Times. He agrees with me that Trump is going to win. Doesn't necessarily mean that we think it's a good idea.
No, it's
we
just terrible. Terrifying.
We happen to think that it's a metaphysical certitude. And we'll explain exactly why coming up. But first, the Atlanta Paramedics got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
Weeknights on WGN-TV, it's Politically Incorrect in prime time. Watch an hour of 2.5 Men, followed by an hour of Last Man Standing with Tim Allen. Weeknights 7 to 9 on WGN-TV.
Neil Steinberg from the Sun-Times is with us, and he's written a book called Out of the Wreck I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. And I think recovery from a lot of different things, too, and it's great. I mean, there's nothing short of that. And I don't want to be quoted on some sort of cover or some sort of poster. I just want to tell you personally, I think that this thing is great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Rob. It means a lot to me because you're a literate guy.
Yes, well, I'm literal. Let's talk about Donald Trump here because you've written I read the Sun-Times religiously. I still get it at my doorstep. It's the only newspaper I still get at my doorstep.
It's the only newspaper worth putting on your doorstep.
Well, let me put it this way. It's the only newspaper that won't leave my doorstep. It just keeps showing up, whether I tell it to or not, even though I read it on the app.
This is the thing with Trump, okay? He survived to this point. They're neck and neck, okay? Everything he's done since a year ago, June, it's only made him stronger. So you watch that debate Monday night, you're like, you and I are like, oh, my God, she crushed him. But then
I don't happen to agree with that. I think that he held his own for the first half hour. But
yeah, crushed him. She was the woman you want to be president unless you're a Trump supporter. And then you want him to be president. And nothing that's going to happen is going to change that. And what I worry is that his supporters are just passionate for him and everything he represents. Xenophobia, racism, going back in time to some happy Eden that he's going to lead them to, getting jobs that are never coming back, all that stuff. While she represents all the things that he's pointing out, that she's a woman, that she's a grandmother, that she's been a politician for 30 years, that she has a record you can attack. You know, they bring up Benghazi as if it's a sin. To me, Benghazi is the biggest endorsement of her. If she was Secretary of State for 4 years and that's what they have against her, she must have done a pretty good job. But that's me. That's you and I. It's not just a talking point for us. So I wanted, you know, to me, two terror attacks and he's president. OK, because he's standing there saying law and order and people are afraid and they're following him and they don't care that he's a fraud and they don't care that he's a bigot and they don't care that he doesn't really have the business experience that can translate into running a government, that he says, well, you know, I started the hotel, I can run the country, but he can't.
That part is all true. He doesn't have the business experience that translates to running a government. He doesn't have the temperament for it. He doesn't have the. I agree with you on. He is a fraud. I mean, he's making stuff up. And we just had a quote from a woman that we interviewed earlier today out on the street. It was like, he goes and he tells the truth. Actually, he's the most untruthful candidate I have ever seen run for president.
And it doesn't matter. Okay, that's what scares me. Okay, we understand, when I say he's going to win, it's not like I want him to win. I'm not being the Delphic Oracle. I'm not hoping I'm right. I'm hoping I'm wrong. But I had to say that because from what I was seeing in Hillary supporters, they were all high-fiving each other, happy. And I'm saying, no. This is like a Terminator 3. He's the Mercury guy. He's going to reconstitute.
It ended today. And I'll tell you when it ended today.
The momentum.
Anna and I are sitting in our office. We're watching, we get these big screens in there watching the TV from around the world, around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the cable newsers had gone to Hillary's speech in New Hampshire. And it was Anna who pointed it out. This looks like a high school assembly. This is boring. Look at how nothing is happening here. And this is it. I mean, the thing is that you're right. She represents the faded memories of the last 10 years now of loss and of frustration and fear that Americans have about the economy and terrorism and all that. He's articulating those fears. He articulates them with that same sort of, bravado that the schoolyard bully does too. I'm going to punch in your head because, the little kid annoys him, and all of that. And it's not just a terror attack. There will be another data dump by whomever. How do we know it's Russia?
Look, reality's no fun. If you wanted to build a house and you were thinking of Anna and I, and I said, okay, Ro, you need plans, you need electrical circuits, you need to pour a foundation, you need architects. And Anna said, no, you just have to close your eyes and wish. If you weren't, certain people would just go, oh, yeah, that sounds a lot easier. I'm going to wish. And so whatever she's saying is not as attractive to a certain sort of person.
She's also not performing it well, I don't think.
And I think people are all in the middle right now are dissatisfied with both of them. And they're willing to overlook either his flaws or her flaws and go in that direction. And I think in his case, it's the people who feel as if the establishment politics haven't been really helping them. And, I see that he says offensive things or racist things, and I don't like that part of him. I'm not going to embrace the entire candidate, but I believe that that sort of change would be better for me. I think there's a little bit, and that's who they're playing for right now, that middle. Right. Who are you least fearful of?
And there's a global trend, too. I mean, when Brexit happened in June, I thought, we're over. When Britain basically were so afraid of having Turkish immigrants, they cut their nose off and dumped out of the European Union at a tremendous cost. Mm-hmm. Same thing in France. Same thing in the Philippines, where they basically elected a madman. So we have to understand, as much as we like to think we're exceptional, we're part of this whole global, isolationist
reset.
Reset. And. Yeah. That's Donald Trump. I mean, we might think that we could, and maybe
it's also Twitter.
It's all, yeah.
And Facebook.
Facebook, all that internet stuff, that's like a masked ball for haters, and I see them getting emboldened. I see they're like people who are disfigured and now it's Halloween and they can come out of the house and suddenly be accepted. it's getting viler. And that's, I don't worry so much for myself, but, as far as having a country that's going towards the future that's coming, whether we prepare for it or not. And so, it's a terrifying time, which is why I wrote the column saying Trump's going to win, because, I don't want to just be smiling and go to the polls and be surprised come November 8th.
Out of the Wreck I Rise is the new book by Neil Steinberg and Sarah Bader, a literary companion to recovery. It is, and again, I'm just going to use the word great. It is great. It is like everything that Neil writes. It is easy to read. It's a joy to read. But beyond that, you also get these incredible quotes and moments from the greatest literary masters of the literate age.
And Ricky Gervais.
And Ricky Gervais, right? Right. And as you pointed out, and Homer Simpson.
And Homer Simpson.
Not even a real guy.
Right.
He's a cartoon.
I credit Bob Oldenkirk and the actual writers of it as well.
Yes, it's something that you really, really will, if you're struggling with addiction, recovery from addiction, recovery mm-hmm. from loss, pain, whatever it happens to be. I think this is an amazing, it's an amazing piece of work. And
thank you, Rob.
You know, you've done something here, Neil.
And we're signing tomorrow at Atlas Stationers, 227 Westlake.
Yes, that's important to mention. Atlas Stationers, 227 Westlake in Chicago, noon to two. Go by, say hi to Neil Steinberg and buy the book. Coming up on the other side of this, Laura Caldwell is going to join us. She is sitting down with Amanda Knox, the young woman who was accused of murder in Italy and then
exonerated.
Mm-hmm. But then they're like, hey, you got to come back now.
Right.
We'll talk about what that's all about. That's coming your way. But first, Judy's News, 2 minutes away.